worked with water users throughout the state. About 21 of those years, I had the opportunity to be the state hearing officer to get to go around the state and hear a lot of friendly discussions about water use and who didn't like people using water and who should do what, who should do what. It was just interesting to go through that process, but it's a good process to go through. That's a public process, and it gives people an opportunity to get before the state engineer to give explanations of concerns and interests in water use throughout the state. And then the state then has the responsibility through the state engineer to make sure that waters are managed effectively and managed in a manner that protect the rights of others. This meeting today is a follow-up meeting for the establishment of a groundwater management plan here in the Borough Enterprise area. State engineer, currently and past engineers, have been watching this area for a long time. We get annual reports about groundwater conditions throughout the state, and we watch what's happening to monitor levels and see what the groundwater is doing throughout the state. And we're happy to announce the records this year actually showed a little bit of a blip in the groundwater. It did start coming up, but it, instead of going like this, it went more like this. And this area, we saw that was an improvement. And so I think what we need to do is just pass some kind of local ordinance that we have the same kind of water year last year, every year. And then I think we might have the problem solved if we just keep it running there. You're like, this year probably didn't have, except I understand the last 50 or so days, we've had quite a bit of rainfall out here. So if we keep it raining, keep the water coming in, that helps the situation. But generally, we see some very significant declines in the groundwater basin in this area, up to 200 feet of declines over the past many years. And we're getting very concerned about that. As people are having to drop pumps to get to the water, we're having to chase that, and the water level keeps going down and down. The Division of Water Rights and NEA State Engineer think that we need to do something about that. So we started some discussions several years ago about how to establish a groundwater management plan in this area. And some of those discussions were a little interesting and heated, and some of them have gone more smooth. But we appreciate the public input and the help that we've had. In formulating this plan, we have
to advance it. Is this just point here?
Okay. I'm getting my electric signal set.
Did it work?
Okay, here we go. Okay. We met last year about in November. We had the opportunity to get together and have a public meeting, and we were required when we established a groundwater management plan to have a public meeting, get the public involved, and get public input. We made a presentation of the proposed plan at that time. Now, there is a plan that's been passed out tonight. I hope you got a copy of that. We went through that process. And by the way, there is a sign up list that's going around that would be nice to have you put your name on that to help us communicate with you and let you know what we're doing. That's being passed around the audience. I hear if you get your name on that, I'd appreciate that very much. But last November, we presented a plan to you, and then by statute, we're required to give you a 60-day time period to get some comments and input to us to let us know what your concerns are. And we received several comments that came in, and we're able to evaluate those. And we've had the opportunity to implement some of those. We've considered some and felt like maybe they didn't fit into what we needed to establish as far as this management plan is. But we've tried to be as sensitive as we can to concerns that you've expressed. And so we've kind of gone through those and implemented them into this plan. And James Greer, who's the Assistant State Engineer for our Technical Services here, is going to talk a little bit about some of those changes and how what we've done to implement those. But our concerns in developing this groundwater management plan are to look at what's happening to the basin. And the statute gives the state engineer authority to look at safe yield for the basin. And that's the amount of water that we feel comes in annually to the basin. That amount of water, as long as we don't take that amount of water, the groundwater water level should stay fairly stable. We take more than the safe yield, then the groundwater starts to decline, and we're experiencing that here in this valley. And so we're trying to get a good handle. We think we have a pretty good handle on the safe yield of the valley. And we're going to continue to look at that. Every year we get new reports and we get evaluations about where we are. We'll be watching that carefully as the years go by here. We've gone through and established a priority list of all the water users in the valley. We've actually got that list published on our website and kind of lists priorities and rights. Now, the same engineer, by statutory authority, has to administer water rights on a prior appropriation basis, which is first in time, is first in right. If you're the first one here, have the first priority, you have the right to have your water right in its entirety before anybody else can get that. It's a little bit difficult in groundwater management because one well pumping at this point compared to a well pump over here, you know, are they completely tied? Do they interfere with one another? We've had to look at that and kind of establish a groundwater basin here to manage the groundwater of all of those waters that we feel are hydrologically connected. And so we've gone through that basin, and James will talk about the boundaries of that basin, and we'll talk about the priority list and where water rights sit and what the priorities are there. Based on that last November's meeting, we did make some modifications to the plan. We'll talk about those tonight. We'll talk about some of the boundaries of the area and kind of the baseline data that we're going to use to evaluate. He's there. Under Section 73.515 of the Utah Code, it talks about authorities that stand here. I don't find it important to understand some of the things that we're dealing with here. It says, the state engineer may regulate groundwater withdrawals within a specific groundwater basin by adopting a groundwater management plan in accordance with this section for any groundwater basin or aquifer or combination of hydrologically connected groundwater basins or aquifers. The objectives of the groundwater management plan are to limit groundwater withdrawals to safe yield, protect the physical integrity of the aquifer, and protect water quality. And it says the state engineer shall base the provisions of a groundwater management plan on the principles of prior appropriation. So we've got the priority doctrine that's established, that's our authority. It says that the state engineer determines that groundwater withdrawals in a groundwater basin exceed the safe yield, the state engineer shall regulate groundwater rights in that groundwater basin based on the priority date of a water rights under the groundwater management plan. Now it goes on to say, unless there's a voluntary arrangement that exists under Section 4C of this code that requires a different distribution. So the state engineer is giving some pretty specific assignments to regulate priority, to regulate the groundwater basin based on priority. Again, first in time is first in right, unless there's a voluntary arrangement established in the area that's acceptable to the state engineer. Let's go to the next one. This will probably, there'll be a test on all these numbers. These are some of the graphs that we've been looking at over time that kind of show the wells in the area, selected areas around the valley. And you can see all of the curves kind of going this way, which is going from high to low. All of the wells seem to be dropping, with the exception, I know we've looked at the Town of Escalante well, which is right at the head of the valley, the Shoal Creek kind of comes down and it seems to recharge the aquifer there. That's staying fairly stable, but as the water moves out of the valley, it's just dropping and going down fairly significantly. We're thinking that's the problem that's come up before us. We need to address that, because if we don't, it's just going to keep going down. And we think the integrity of the aquifer is going to be impacted, and we're worried about water quality and other issues there. Excuse me. In the safe yield evaluation, we've actually made a determination. It's about 34,000 acre feet of water that's available annually in the basin. The current depletion, as we've looked at, the use in the valley is about 65,000 acre feet per year, which exceeds the safe yield by about 31,000 acre feet of water per year. And that's why we're seeing on those graphs the groundwater declining as significantly as it is. The groundwater management plan is established to help stabilize that. We don't think we're going to get the groundwater back to where it was historically, but what we're trying to do is to get those curves to stabilize and remain constant. And to do that, we're of the opinion that 31,000 acre feet of depletion is going to have to be eliminated in this valley in order to meet that condition, or we're going to continue to drop significantly. So that's the process we're going to do. The plan implements a regulation schedule that talks about when things are going to take place. The first date coming up is going to be October 31st of 2030, when the first cut is going to take place in the basin based on priority, and that's going to be a 5% cut. We've kind of got a first phase of the first two cuts going from 2030 to 2050, where we're going to have to look at a 10% reduction. And there's a provision in statute that gives the state engineer the opportunity to develop a gradual plan of implementation. And I feel very strongly that that's what we need to do. And we've had a great opportunity to work with Escalante water users and others to get some input on where we need to go. We really appreciate their cooperation and work on this and their deep thought and time that they spent and recommendations they made to help us consider what needs to be done here in the valley. They provided some invaluable input to us. This regulation schedule kind of talks about where we're going to go, then, the cuts that we need to make. And we've decided to implement this plan based on the first 37 years. And from now, so that by 2050, that first phase is going to be done. We're going to have to make those cuts. And then every 10 years thereafter, we're looking at an additional 5% cut until we reach the amount of cuts necessary to reach that 31,000. And it seems like a long time. Last year, we had somebody volunteer to be here to make sure that this plan was implemented. So I can't remember if that person's here. but you only have to stay here until 2130, and then you can verify that. That's a long way out, and we've had some people talk to us say that's kind of an unreasonable deadline, isn't it? But we're thinking, you know, it's taken many years to get where we are right now, and we need some time to get this corrected and rectified. We need to work together as a community and with the state to kind of help rectify the problem and get this resolved. And so we're very supportive of what this regulation schedule is, and we're going to hold with that. There are some baseline data things that we're going to talk about tonight just quickly that'll help give us some information on that. But basically, the plan is pretty close to what we presented last November. It has this regulation schedule. It talks about how we're going to calculate depletion based on acreage surveys. And we've got our commissioner that will go out every year and make recommendations at our meeting, showing us the acres of irrigated, the types of crops, and the depletions associated with that. We're going to meet every year and kind of talk about where we are and what the groundwater is doing, what we need to do to meet these cutoff deadlines that are coming in the future. It's an adaptive management plan. Our whole purpose, again, is to, the plan we'll talk about, is trying to stabilize the groundwater declines and just to get things in a stable level so that we can continue to use the aquifer as long as we want to use that. It allows for a voluntary arrangement where we would encourage you as local water users to get together as best you can to come up with a plan on how you're going to make these cuts. And if you can come to us with a plan to make reasonably meet these goals and objectives, the state engineers would be very supportive of that. If you don't do that, I have to regulate my priority. So come 2030, there's a cut that has to be done, and I'm going to have to go down that list and say, okay, here's the list, and here's the line, and everybody that has a priority earlier, or not before that, has a later priority than that, they're going to have to be cut off. I'm just not going to be able to use it because there are other rights that are established and need to have the rights first. And again, that's in lieu of the water community coming up with a voluntary arrangement to kind of work out how this can be done without kind of by priority. Again, I would encourage that very much. The other issue that the plan talks about is change application considerations. And in the past, we've kind of had zones in this valley where we've restricted where water can be moved, knowing we used to have some really heavily pumped areas and some that weren't quite so heavily pumped, and we weren't allowing changes to come into the heavily pumped area. Right now, because that area has expanded so significantly, it's it's quite spread out through the valley, that we're going to eliminate that line with this plan to say you can do changes from groundwater where you need to go. And the valley may all be considered on their own merits. And we'll look for localized interference, but we're not going to restrict the boundary lines inside the valley, but we will look at any change application that comes before us as long as it meets criteria for not impairing the rights of others. So basically the plan is staying about the same. James is going to talk to you just a little bit about some of the changes that we've made. And after James talks, we'd like to turn the time over to the Escalante Valley water users to have them talk a little bit about some of the history and our involvement in some of the processes that we've gone through. And then after that, I'm going to talk about the plan adoption and how this is going to be implemented and what the options are at that time. So I'll turn the time to James.
Thanks, Ken. So like I said, I'm just going to talk very briefly about some of the changes that were implemented in the plan based on comments or feedback we received in the last public meeting. One of the main comments was where was the plan available to be viewed? It was difficult to get access to the plan. So we tried to make it as easily accessible as we can. First off, we did bring copies of the plan, drafted the plan here. I think have been handed out. But our website is where we will have copies of that plan for everyone, is www.waterrights.utah.gov. So when you go to our website, this is what it looks like. And under our main menu here, there is a menu item for lawn agreements, and the bottom item is for groundwater management plans. So if you select that area on our website, it takes you to a location which shows all the groundwater management plans that have been implemented throughout the state to this point. The very first item in the list is the Burl Enterprise groundwater management plan. That first link takes you to a website with a bunch of background information. Can you go back, Jared? The second link will take you to an actual version of the copy of the plan that we passed out today. And the third link here will take you to the priority listing that Kent had mentioned. Okay, go ahead. So this is that priority listing, a screenshot of that. From the last meeting, we had a lot of discussion about the accuracy of that list. And so once again, since the last meeting, we've gone through right by right to review each of those rights to confirm and update that list with any mistakes or changes that have happened since we last looked at that list. We feel pretty confident about this list and the validity of all the information that we've compiled together. As you know, water rights are active and they change and move, so this list is dynamic. As things change in the valley and change applications or segregations happen, this list will be updated and continue to monitor where each of the rights are based on priority and value. If you were to scroll down this list, you would see down lower there are visual representations of where each of the cuts would be as part of the regulation schedule. So that is one of the changes from the last meeting. This list has just been updated and reviewed once again. Quite an effort, actually, to review all of these rights. Many, many rights in the valley, and a lot of work went into that. Kent mentioned from the last meeting there was a lot of discussion and feedback about the boundary of our plan. And actually, after looking at it in detail, there were some slight modifications to the boundary. They were really just adjustments based on the division's historical administration of water in the area. One of these adjustments was this area of the plan was the boundary used to come through about here. It was moved slightly to the south to account for historically we distribute water in the Escalante Desert north to south about where we had placed this new boundary. So lands that were irrigated up here were being accounted for in the northern part of the valley as part of the Milford distribution system, not the Burl Enterprise distribution system. So we made that adjustment so we could account for the writes where we have normally accounted for them. Additionally, the eastern boundary here, there was a slight, very slight modification to align with some administrative boundaries between the Cedar City Basin and the Escalante Valley Basin that more aligned with our water right areas that were slightly off. Those adjustments did not make any difference on the water rights that were included that would eventually be regulated under this plan. So there weren't any effects from those changes, but it helped us understand a little better, closely coordinate with how we historically regulated water in the valleys.
Those are the modifications to the boundary.
The other modification in the plan is that to track the depletions over time, to track irrigation depletions over time, as you are maybe aware, every year all of the irrigation is mapped by the Water Commissioner. So to be able to track any decreases in irrigation or increases in efficiency of water application because of different crop types, we map those crop types.
And so we change the baseline irrigation to the total amount of irrigated acres from this irrigation season.
Those acres are all the acres from both surface and underground sources, so that it's easily mappable and easily tracked. So in years to come, we can easily track how much irrigation is occurring in the valley.
Every year, we will publish in the Burl Enterprise Water Distribution System annual water report
the amount of baseline acres and any reductions that have taken place in those acres. For example,
go ahead, Jared.
This is a preliminary estimate based on this current year's map irrigation from the Water Commissioner's report. He hasn't fully completed all of his numbers yet, but this is what he's mapped for this past given year.
So I'll give you a second to maybe look at that. What we're showing here is out of the whole valley, for all irrigation, there was essentially 2,692 acres of corn irrigated, 1,243 of grain
that then, after they harvested the grain crop, planted alfalfa,
585 acres of grain, 133 of potatoes, and the rest was 24,000
acres of alfalfa, for a total of 29,278 total acres irrigated by all sources in the valley.
So what this is showing is if we look at the net irrigation number for each of those crop types, do the multiplication between the net irrigation and the number of acres, how much water was actually consumed to irrigate those crops. Summing that value up, we receive 68,000 acre feet was used or consumed in the valley this last year. Okay? Now, our baseline is the total number of acres from this last year, but if all of those acres were actually producing alfalfa. So if they were, we would have consumed 72,975 acre feet. Okay? So each year we will report these two numbers, and what this is showing based on our baseline and the actual what was consumed based on the crop types, we've already reduced 4,477 acre feet of depletions in the valley. And that is because there's already been a pretty significant amount of acres that has been converted to other crop types instead of a very consumptive crop, alfalfa, and much less consumptive crops of corn and grain.
So what that means is each year we report these numbers and show the effect of those crop conversions, and additionally we'll map, and if any acres were just
taken out, say there was only 23,000 acres of alfalfa, you would get a benefit of 1,000 less acres of alfalfa as a reduction shown from the baseline. And that is how we will track over the years the depletions in the valley from irrigation. And like I said, each year we will publish that in that annual water report.
Thanks, Jared. So, if you go back to that number, it was over 4,000 acres of depletion that's already been accounted for. So I don't know if Ken wanted to talk about this, but I just wanted to make note to realize that in 2030, the reduction that is the reduction cut from the schedule is only 3,250 acre feet. So if the irrigation practices stay the same, the valley as a whole has already met their first cut reduction. So no additional reductions would have to be made on the valley-wide as a whole if the practices that are currently in place remain in the valley. Let's see. Other than slight modifications to some verbiage in the plan, those were the only modifications from the plan we presented last year at the meeting in November to this year. Did you want to take questions? That's all I had for today. You want to take any questions now before we've done the SMLA Water Association about any information I presented here? Yes.
You had up there before you switched this the interaction between the groundwater and surface water. Are you doing anything to enforce the limitations on surface irrigation so that they're not utilizing more water than they're supposed to under surface irrigation? Because that depletes more water from the underground.
Yes, so we are mapping them all together. So if they use...
That's not my question.
Okay.
My question specifically is, are you monitoring surface irrigation and limiting surface irrigators to the amount of their beneficial use under their certificates?
I would say yes. Yes, we monitor all the use in the valley, and we check it with their legal acreage. And if they were to irrigate more than the legal acreage, they would be, I don't know, how do you put that? They'd be enforcement action if that were the case.
We do it on
that acreage. But we do also monitor the surface sources, the main surface sources
we have in and out of the reservoir protection.
Yeah. But yes, we would.
I have another question.
Yes, go ahead.
There are also some unregulated, my understanding is there are some unregulated withdrawals from groundwater in mining operations, whether there's any other than mining or not. How are you accounting for those and making sure that those go back into the ground and are not consumptively used so that, again, I mean, these are unregulated. So how do you account for those and how do you enforce regulations on those users and those withdrawals?
If there were, I don't know if you want to answer the question, but if there were a case of unregulated use that is in excess of a water right or outside the bounds of the water rights, they would also be subject to enforcement action. And if that was made aware to us, we would pursue that enforcement action against those entities that were illegally diverting or using water outside the limits of their water right.
Forgive me for not being an expert in this area.
That's fine.
Go ahead.
Do you want to go, Kurt?
I was just going to say, those large mining operations, I believe the approvals on them require them to submit their pump records to the water use program, which we then track and see that they're within their legal limits.
Okay. So we can check to make sure that we're actually they're fulfilling that requirement. Are there any other questions? Boyd, did you have a comment?
I just wondered if everybody signed the
signing sheet that it got around everywhere. Okay, so I think we're turning time over to Escalante Water Users Association that want to take some time to talk about some of the things they've been working on.
He'll just do it up there. That'll be fine. If you'll just go to the Slide. That's not the right one. I guess we made a presentation in the last meeting, and one of the reasons that I think State Engineer would like us to be here and speak is to speak of our involvement in developing this plan. So to start out with, I guess we need to explain who the Escalante Valley water users are to those of you who aren't members. Did you go to that next one, please? All right. The Escalante Water Users was formed. It's a voluntary organization formed by irrigators in the Escalante Valley. It's governed by a 9-member board. We initially formed it to be able to lobby as the state was going in to create this critical groundwater insert into the law. I don't know exactly what to call it, but they put language into the law to regulate groundwater basins that were being depleted. And we knew that we needed to lobby, and we also needed an organization that we could hire an engineer to help us with our lobbying and to do any studies that were required. We've had annual meetings since 2004, and we've held many, many meetings with the state engineer. And if you're interested in our history, we have a web page that's, I think you can see it listed there, evwua.org. Lee Bracken has kept that up to date, kept notes at all our meetings. We've had meetings with state engineer, and he keeps notes and board meetings, and he posts those on that site. And so if you want to go there and see some of the activity we've done as the Escalante Valley water users, you can do that. So next, go to the next one. And here's a whole list of dates. If you'll... Okay, of events that have happened, I won't go through them all. Probably one important one is we retained former state engineer D. Hansen to help us with our lobbying effort, and also to... He did a water study for us that I think Liddell's going to present when he gets up and presents that projects out into the future what he thought, which was probably a little different than what the former engineer, Jerry Olds, that started this process had. And so we just had somebody take a little different look at it. We debated with the task force, but probably the most important thing that happened is as this law was being adopted, we worked hard and we got the language from may consider to shall consider economic impacts and gradual implementation. And I think this plan has done that, and I want to compliment the state engineer and his staff because they've given us a large window. Basically, I'd like to say 40 years, but it's actually 37 years. It was 40 years from 2010. He started the plan in 2010. But he's basically given us a 40-year period that if we do the right type of cropping, that there will not be any hard cuts for 40 years. And that's a pretty long time frame for implementation of the plan. And you know, it's been good. And it took a little work to get their attention. If you'll notice, down there in 2009, we need to praise a lot of our local legislators. Some of them aren't around anymore, and some of them aren't in office anymore, but they jerked state engineers' funds to do any planning in the Escalante Valley. And that, I think that kind of got the attention of the state engineer. It wasn't Ken, it was his predecessor. But that we do owe some... We've had some great support from our legislators. And we've developed a relationship with the new state engineer, and we've negotiated a framework for the plan. So if you go to the next slide, the legislature passed, I guess it was safe yield was what the language was. I'd looked ahead. And the process was begun in Burrell, and then moratorium, and then the new state engineer was hired. And then after that, Senator Stoll worked hard to pass legislation that would allow us to form a district if we chose to do that, that could operate and hold water rights without them being taken back for non-use, and tried to facilitate a way that he thought we might manage this plan. Liddell's going to talk about some of the options. I'd like to say since the last time we met with the state engineer in the spring, we worked real hard on this, but it's been mostly the last month that we, because we got busy farming, that we worked hard on looking at this local plan, and Liddell's going to present some of the options. But we've taken a pretty hard look, the 9-member board, at those options. And so now we're to the point that we've got a plan, the plan's going to be adopted, and I just want to put my part in, as I did earlier, that I think it's a good plan. We could have done a lot worse. I mean, a lot of us would like them to go away and leave us alone, and the EPA and everybody else, but that's probably not going to happen. And so this is a good plan. It gives us a horizon to plan for that's way out in the future, and we should be able to prepare ourselves in that period of when it happens in 2050, that we can be ready and planned for those cuts, the hard cuts that will have to start coming. With that, Liddell, I'll turn the time over to Liddell to talk to you about the districts.
Just a couple of quick slides to just show you pictures that we've prepared for ourselves, independent of the state engineer, to try to satisfy what's going on here. This is just a picture of what we think is a gradual implementation horizon. That's 120 years. And a pretty gradual approach. And that was probably the main thing we saw when we went to the legislature back in 2005. And so just a picture of that. There's a couple different colors. The yellow kind of shows the conservation time frame. And the blue is the adaptive management horizon. And the state engineer did say it, but if water levels level off before the end, we'll use adaptive management and there won't be any cuts. So just, I don't know if the weather's going to change. It's changed the last couple of years, so we'll see what happens. Next slide. This is just a picture we prepared that shows the sky really isn't falling. For anybody who's just worried that we're going to run out of water, we hired Dean Hansen to do a study, and sure, the water table is declining. And this is an average chart, so there's areas where the water tables are much lower than this and much more steep, but if you just take the whole basin as a whole, we are seeing a gradual decline. And frankly, if we use this plan, it's going to be 150 years before we really see a result. So just so everybody's clear, it's not going to level off until probably 2175, based on the study Dean Hansen did. So let's just get to where we are.
Next slide.
So the state engineer presented his plan, and we really have three options to achieve the reductions that the state engineer is going to see in the time frame. The first one is what I call a default or priority date government state engineer. He talked a little bit about that. The second option is a voluntary pooling arrangement by the water users, and the third one is the creation of a water district. And let's just go to the next slide. I'll talk a little bit about each of these. Absent a voluntary plan, the state engineer will govern this by priority date. And basically what that means is he's going to have to cut based on that list that he showed you on the website. I printed about a half dozen copies of that, so if somebody wants to take a paper copy, I do have a half dozen copies up here that you can take, but it's on the website as well. And it's a pretty good reality check if you want to take a look at it. So that's the default position. So what are the options really? Next slide. We have done a lot of discussion with the state engineer about what we would call a voluntary arrangement. What does that mean? That means we would pool the water rights to collectively achieve the necessary cuts. And it would be on a pro rata basis rather than on a priority date. We wouldn't really have a formal organization. State engineer would still administer the cuts. But we have simple agreements, and what those simple agreements basically would say is if you join the voluntary group, your water right number or year or priority is all the same. So there are no prejudices for the water right
priority. It's everybody in the group's the same. So when the state engineer comes and says we need 3,250 acre feet of depletion cut, the group would take that cut as a group, not as individuals. And so the idea would be it would be on a pro rata basis. So everybody in the group, you just take a number and divide it out. So what are the advantages of that? The advantages of that are, instead of losing an entire water right in one of those cut years, the cut could be spread over time, maybe more evenly. One of the other advantages of that is it's easier to take advantage of the crop efficiency program that James Greer talked about. It's easier to achieve that and take advantage of that if everybody's in the long-term arrangement. In fact, I would argue that in all of these meetings that have been staying here, and there's been a lot of meetings, we have represented that we felt like we had a cooperative group, a cooperative effort to try and ease the state engineer's burden of doing this process. And in exchange for that, he's been much more lenient, in our opinion. In other words, we basically just negotiated the framework for a deal that makes this easier on his part and that it's easier to manage on our part, sort of a win-win arrangement. So, I don't know if he'll take back anything he's agreed to here if we don't get that done, but we have represented that we've been working to do that. Then at the bottom there is voluntary. That's the bottom line, is nobody forces anybody to do anything. This is a voluntary. You sign up to be involved in the voluntary group. And again, some advantages of that are you can better take advantage of the cropping program, which extends the period out an additional 20 years, essentially, at this point. The last option is utilizing the water district law that was put into place. This is a little more formal, a lot more formal. It's inclusive of everyone. That's what it does. One of the advantages is it allows for a culinary solution to involve culinary users as well as the agricultural users. It's not like any district you're aware of, not like a water district, Washington County or Iron County. It's not like a special service district of the garbage or other things. It's just a water district. It's created voluntarily by those affected. Self-governance and board representation and voting by water right, not property ownership. And so if we decide that is the direction we want to go, we take all the water rights and if a supermajority determined that they wanted to create this district, they can do that with a supermajority. Why would we want to do that? As a formal organization, we would have the ability to bond, to borrow, enter into agreements, receive grants, maybe low-interest loans. Why would we want to do that? Potentially, as a group, if we were in a district, we could purchase water rights as people put them up for sale and use those water rights to achieve the reductions. And we would get grants and loans to do that and then pay those loans back by basically assessing ourselves. It allows for the protection of water rights. The language that was adopted allows for water banking, if you will. So those rights could be held by a district, and if the water table and conditions ever changed, those could be reused. They wouldn't be forfeited. And then, like I mentioned, the authority to tax or assess as needed. So those are really the three options. Next slide. It's our chore to determine the best option to achieve the water right reduction. So we can let the state engineer come in and just do the default position. We can enter into a voluntary arrangement, or we can do a formal water district. As we have discussed this as a water group, ag water group, we feel like we can achieve most of everything we want to in a voluntary arrangement. We have some ideas of how we can get that done without a lot of cost and without a lot of administrative problems. The state engineers agreed to help us with that. We have some other folks that are willing to help us do that. And again, what you're volunteering is you're not giving up your water right, you're not doing anything like that, you're just volunteering that your water right now, if it's in the pool, has the same priority date as everybody else in the pool. And therefore, when the cuts come, everybody takes a pro rata share of the cut. So I don't have any questions for us, but it's been an interesting process. I, too, just want to thank Kent Jones and his staff. They've been great to work with, and I feel like they've been on backwards to help us achieve the objectives we set out to achieve, which was gradual implementation and monitoring and being very sensitive of the economic impacts. And I think the last one we got was that cropping pattern, and that was, I'll just say, it's a gift. And it really gives us more like a 40-year horizon to prepare for this instead of a 20-year horizon. And I think most of us can live with the 40-year horizon. So that's all I have.
And I lost the battery out of your pointer.
That's great.
Thanks, gentlemen. I do want to point out that we really appreciate the opportunity we've had to work with the local users here for the last couple of years. It's been a positive experience. It's been a good negotiation process too, and it was a big concession for Mike to stand up here today and go from 40 to 37. That was a big deal. I'm glad that's going to work. We've all had some give and take about where we ought to be, but when it comes down to it, this is your community. We're doing things here to protect the viability of the aquifer, to protect the aquifer so that this community can continue to thrive based on the water resources. Many of us here will not see the benefits of that, and we're setting up a plan, we're working toward it, but our kids are going to benefit from it. Your kids will, your grandkids will, and the aquifer will be able to be sustained for many, many years to come, and the economic viability of the community based on that aquifer use will be sustained. I feel very strongly about that, and it's a problem that we share together. And I appreciate the willingness of local users to step up and work together. And some of the suggestions that they made have been great. I didn't particularly agree with Dee Hansen's evaluation of the aquifer, but again, there's some give and take that we're looking at there. I think we've come to a good agreement on it. And I think this gradual implementation program is going to work well. But we need to come together as a community to get it implemented. Now, with this meeting, to implement this, I'm required to have this meeting. I'm required to send notice. The statute is fairly clear on how we're going to adopt this plan. It says at least 60 days prior to final adoption of the groundwater management plan, I'm supposed to publish a notice. Okay? And so we're going to publish a notice. We're supposed to tell you that where you can obtain a draft of the groundwater management plan that's been proposed, specifying where a copy of that draft plan may be reviewed, and then promptly provide a copy of the draft plan in printed or electronic form to each of the entities listed in this section. There's the specific groups that we have to send the water or the groundwater management plan to, and we will do that. And it says, provide notice of the adoption of the groundwater management plan. And then this notice, it says, the groundwater management plan shall become effective on the date notice of adoption is completed under Section 7, or on the later date specified in the plan. And it's not specified in the plan, so it's going to be adopted as of completion of the notice. And so the notice requirements are then that we're going to publish a notice, and it's going to be it says, published once a week for two successive weeks in a newspaper of general circulation in each county that encompasses a portion of the land area proposed to be included within the groundwater management plan. And it talks about publishing for 2 weeks again. We're supposed to publish conspicuously on the State Engineers Internet website. That's where that's going to be. And then it gives us some instructions on who we have to mail a copy to, but we are going to mail a copy of the notice of the plan implementation. It will be implemented 60 days from the date of that notice. Okay, so the notice goes out, we have a publication, and then 60 days from the end of the official notification by publication, this plan will be adopted. Now, you've got options at that point. It says a person aggrieved by a groundwater management plan may challenge any aspect of the groundwater management plan by filing a complaint within 60 days after the adoption of the groundwater management plan. in the district court for any county in which the groundwater basin is found. So you've got some options there. At this point, I hope we've worked through things satisfactorily enough that that doesn't happen, but if it does, you've got some options that you can actually take this to court, and that would be within 60 days after the adoption of the plan, which will be 60 days after the notification, so the publication notice that we send out, 60 days after that, it would be implemented. But then you've got some options legally, and then the statute kind of talks about the legal obligations of those who file a complaint or a challenge to the plan. There's some public notification and advertising requirements. It's a process that you have to go through, but it can be challenged. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. Anything else, Steph, that you think of? I think, has that got that covered? Okay.
So if we get this done, it'll be about February, will be the end of the appeal period.
Okay, so people might say about February is going to be the end of the appeal period that you'd have to appeal that decision. 60 days before that would be the official adoption date of this plan, which will be, it'll be a little more than 60 days here because we're going to go through an advertising process. You'll see an advertising of that and you'll receive a notice that the plan is going to be implemented. And so this plan, as proposed here, will take place. So we really appreciate the efforts of those that have been involved in trying to help pull this together. I think this is a good plan, and I think the gradual implementation is going to work. And I think it's a good way to proceed. And I think by working together, we can help everybody survive. I think this is what it is, and make the plan work and make the aquifer produce what it needs to produce and provide advocates for you all and homes. So I appreciate your attendance tonight. Do you have any questions? I think that's all I have to present. And in the back, you have a question?
How concerned are you as a state with the Nevada water use? You know, the aquifer doesn't stop at the state lines, so I've always been concerned about their pumping and buying all the water west of us. How concerned is the state over that situation, because it would affect us, I'm sure.
Okay, and we are very concerned about that. And that's water use in Nevada. How does that affect Utah? We're watching that closely. We've actually been involved in a lengthy process in the shared valley that we have at Nevada and Snake Valley. We've been working diligently with the state there to come up with a plan so that they don't take any of Utah's water allocation. We've tried to decide how to divide that. So you stay on your side and you only take what you're entitled to. We'll stay on our side. We'll take what we're entitled to. They would have the very same concern in Nevada. Because Utah taking more water than they're supposed to and hurting Nevada. So we found it to be a very positive thing to sit down with the water users and to sit down with the state of Nevada. We've met with the state engineer in Nevada several times to talk about these innovation interactions. And we'll watch that and we'll monitor that. And if it looks like it may be a problem, we may need to sit down and talk about that if we think it's going to impact the basin here. Rick, did you have a question?
Yeah, I have several.
Okay.
So my understanding is there's no comment period now for this plan. That you're not accepting additional comments for this plan?
This plan, as proposed, is going to be adopted. So comments, right. We had a meeting last year where we opened that up for comments. We considered those comments as a requirement by statute. This is the meeting to implement.
Second question, have you given any thought or some of the first cuts, potential cuts in the plan are domestic? How does the preference for domestic fit into this? I mean, in times of scarcity, preference is supposed to be given to domestic use over stock watering and irrigation. Is there, do you consider this a time of scarcity, or I guess I'd like to your comments on that.
You know, the statute actually sets up a priority listing for times of scarcity, and it talks about if the governor is going to come in and declare a water shortage time, the governor can do that. And in those times of declaration of water shortage, domestic does have a priority. But it also says if domestic takes that water during those times of shortage, that they have to compensate those that they're taking water from because it's running out their water anymore. They're taking it out of priority. So there would be a provision under there, but do that, but as far as this plan is concerned, this involves domestics as well as irrigators, as well as municipalities. So if your name is first on that list and you're a domestic user, the state engineer is going to come in and indicate that by priority that first user is going to stop using water. And unless the governor comes back and declares a water shortage time, you know, that it wouldn't be, have to be exercised. And then if that happened, then they'd have to come back and figure out where the money's going to have to go to pay whoever's not going to be able to use that water. Okay.
Last one. We talked about cutting by priority. We talked about the voluntary agreement, and we talked about the special service district implementation. How about, is there any provision in here for individual agreement? And let me give you an example. Say I was number one on the priority to be cut on my domestic right, but I have irrigation with a priority date that will never be cut. Is there a provision in here that would allow me to say, okay, I'm going to retire an acre of irrigation and then use that for my domestic use that would normally be cut?
I think that this plan would totally allow for that kind of thing. What I'd suggest, I mean, like domestics that you brought up, if you've got a real junior priority on the domestic, and you've got some real senior rights, irrigation rights, it probably would be wise to take a portion of that and get it committed to the domestic so that you've got an early priority for the home, so the home doesn't get cut off. And then you just, when you get down to the priority, the domestic, then would just be retired. But you certainly can do that. And we would encourage people to pull together as much as you can and work together. We think a voluntary arrangement is a good thing to be able to do that. But if you can accomplish it through change applications or showing how you're going to retire some uses to allow for other uses, you know, I think that's going to work too. So, okay. Other questions? Okay.
Yes, on the voluntary group, the water's pooled into there. Does the priority of that group then become the average of the priorities that are pooled, or how does the priority of that group? Because if there's others that aren't in the group, then their rights are reduced by priority.
I think the priority, the way you're talking about the priority, how does that relate, and is it an average priority? I think the position, if you go together in this cooperative group, we just say that it's an equal priority, okay? Whatever it is. And so if there's a cut, everybody gets cut the same. And that's by agreement. So then it's not considered with the priorities of other rights that are not within the group. And if you're not in the group, we have to come back cut by priority. We will do that. But then the group collectively will make a decision. If, you know, say all of the rights, junior rights, are cut, and start getting into priorities of rights. I mean, it's an interesting question, because, you know, is it 1940 as a group, or is it a 1955 priority as a group? But we'll have to think about that, because as it comes down and we cut those priorities that are junior to that.
I thought when we discussed this, you were still going to cut whatever group. In other words, if you had 5%, you would do by the years in the group, but the group handles it internally, how they spread it out. You would still just cut on priority, and you would cut into the group however far that was by whatever those priorities are.
Okay. The priority dates would stay on file, and the state engineer would look at those collectively, but then internally you would just manage them internally.
Wouldn't the water rights of the group determine the respective cut of that group?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear on that point. It's not that I got lost in my own thoughts. But all of the water rights will still retain their own priorities. Okay, so we start cutting into those priorities. If you're in the group, it will represent then a certain portion that has to be cut based on those priorities, which then if you're in the group, it would be shared by the group on a pro rata basis. I think that's how you explained it right. So sorry I was misleading on that. That's how it will be done if you're in the group. Okay, so there will still remain individual priorities. Okay. Other questions? Okay. Thank you so much for being here. We will see a notice coming out soon for the implementation of this plan, and work together to get this resolved.
It takes 3 years to send it out.
Mike's just saying it's okay if it takes 3 years to send that notice out. He's going to get back to that 40 one way or the other. And you should see that soon. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate your attendance.
That's a slug of paper, isn't it?
He's a tester.
I thought it'd just be a sheet or two.
Yeah, it's a long list.
Because you're going to use all the surface.
That's a big part of the water. change other than, you know, like, something.